Hello, I'm Joe Mastriani. This is number 0152, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0152. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Rick Antonsen, who is the author of Route 66 Still Kicks.
One can still find and drive on, if you're adventurous, perhaps 90% of old Route 66. What happened with the beginning in 1926 is that it patched together all of these partial roadways, linked Chicago to LA, went through 8 states, and as it became more and more popular, people didn't like the traffic jams, wanted fancier and faster transport, and so the superhighways were built. And now 5 superhighways bypass and often dissect the old Route 66.
Scott Fox is the author of Click Millionaires, Work Less, Live More with an Internet Lifestyle Business You Love.
The average person actually can start a business online based on their own hobbies and interests and build what I call a lifestyle business, which means a business that helps support your life and maybe gets you out of that job you hate. Not overnight, I'm not a get-rich-quick guy, but build something reasonable over time and improve your life by becoming an entrepreneur on the internet.
Gay Ferguson is the host of the radio show Beyond the Cheers. He has opinions on cheating in sports.
With all the dollars that are involved in sports today, I think we're getting more conscious and more, at least from the sporting teams and the organizations themselves, is the win mentality and whatever it costs to do to get there. And if they get caught, then it's a hand slap or, you know, in the past, they typically haven't been penalized an awful lot for things of that nature. Now they're getting more, the fines and the indefinite suspensions, so specifically in football, for doing things that you shouldn't be doing in the first place.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, including, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0152, was Joe Mastriani, who is the continuity and production director at CyberStationUSA.com. Of course, you can hear the Stuff File program each and every week on CyberStationUSA.com. And I thank you very much, Joe, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. And of course, the Stuff File program is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smart way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, in Chicago, 3 thieves actually broke through a wall from an adjacent empty business, did belly crawls to avoid motion detectors, and managed to steal 6 duffel bags filled with human hair extensions from a Chicago beauty supply store. Don't laugh. The extensions were worth almost $250,000. Store owner Don Shin says the criminals took his best merchandise and didn't take any of, quote, the cheap stuff, and they knew what they were doing. He believes they'll try to unload the extensions on the street or to other salons. Well, you know what they say, hair today, gone tomorrow. And still with the great state of Illinois, frightening reports from Lake Lou Yeager in Illinois, where scientists have spotted the rare pacu fish, a toothy sea creature that can weigh up to 55 pounds, and according to some, has a penchant for going after men's testicles. Yes, Lake Superintendent Jim Caldwell first brought the fish, which was turned in by a fisherman, to the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, where it was identified as a pacu. Caldwell said the fish posed no real threat to humans, but residents of Papua New Guinea have nicknamed the fish Ball Cutter. In 2011, 2 fishermen had died from blood loss after pacu fish allegedly had bitten off their testicles. Though pacus are native to the Amazon basin, they were released in Papua New Guinea waters in the 1990s as part of an initiative to boost fisheries. Biologists say any pacus in Illinois' lake are most likely former aquarium pets, and by the way, if you're caught dumping the fish in the lake, you could face criminal charges. So Caldwell says they don't pose real threats to humans. Well, I think he got that half right. Women, apparently, have nothing to worry about. Okay, are you lonely for company? Just spread the word you see the Virgin Mary on a daily basis. In rural Sterrett, Alabama, Maria Pavlovich Lunetti said she first saw the apparition of Mary in 1981 at the age of 16 with a group of five other youth in Yugoslavia. Somehow she ended up in Sterrett, which is about 30 minutes outside of Birmingham, and claims to see the Holy Mother daily. Now, despite skepticism of prominent Catholics, thousands have trekked to Sterrett with hopes of hearing a message from the Mother of Jesus, witnessing miracles, and receiving direction about how to follow their faith. On the second day of Lunetti's visit, she announced the Virgin had told her she would appear at 6:40 p.m. Gotta say one thing for Mary, she's apparently prompt. About 2,500 people gathered to pray in a field decorated with the statue of Mary, while others waited with Lunetti in her bedroom for the vision. Lunetti entered the room and began to pray aloud in Croatian. Then she fell silent, still moving her lips and looking upward. She then walked outside to the crowd and said, "She blesses you all." Which is pretty much what they all wanted to hear anyway. You can follow Lunetti, or you can just stay home and rent the Burt Lancaster film Elmer Gantry. Same thing as far as I'm concerned. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, in Brunswick, Maine, police finally located a 29-year-old naked man who had been causing a disturbance on a local golf course. They found him hiding in the bottom of a portable toilet. Yes, our naked and exceptionally stinky friend was taken into protective custody and hospitalized. Initially, police said they could not locate the man, who witnesses said had been rolling in mud, tipping over trash cans, and sitting on top of the green cups. A police spokesman said the man did not respond to voice commands, but eventually Brunswick fire personnel were able to get him out of the toilet and into flexible handcuffs. After he was sprayed down, he was taken to Midcoast Hospital. Now, who gets the lucky job of hosing him down, and does that person think they're being paid enough? That's what I want to know. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66.
As Nat King Cole sang, "Get your kicks on Route 66. For those who like the open road, you'll be glad to know that Route 66 still kicks. In fact, that is the title of a new book written by Rick Antonsen. The full title is Route 66 Still Kicks, Driving America's Main Street. And Rick is on the line with us right now from Vancouver. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So what's a guy in Vancouver doing writing a book about Route 66?
Well, like so many people, I grew up not just hearing the song, but knowing about the television series in the 60s about Route 66 and having this fascination. And I had heard more than once, it is the most famous highway in the world, but it is disappearing. So now's the time to go on the journey.
Now, you say it's disappearing. Just how much of it is left?
One can still find and drive on, if you're adventurous, perhaps 90% of old Route 66. What happened with the beginning in 1926 is that it patched together all of these partial roadways, linked Chicago to L.A., went through eight states, and as it became more and more popular, people didn't like the traffic jams, wanted fancier and faster transport, and so the superhighways were built. And now five superhighways bypass and often dissect the old Route 66.
Isn't one of the things that makes Route 66 so endearing is the things that sprang up along the way over the years that it was popular?
When Route 66 began in the 20s, right through the 50s and the 60s, it was the beginning of many of the ma-and-pa motor courts or family-owned restaurants, and everything was different. Everything from your lunch to your dinner to where you slept, was a one-off. This was before the days of chain restaurants, even the ones like A&W and, in fact, McDonald's and Dairy Queen all began in communities along the way of Route 66. It was always unique.
Now, you traveled along this road, I understand, 2,400 miles, or as we say in Canada, 3,900 kilometers, in a red Mustang convertible. Who were you with?
It was a silver Mustang. It was a convertible, okay. And it was a rental car. I was with a buddy, Peter, and the two of us had been talking about going on a trip together. We couldn't get as much time away as we thought to get to Asia, and he, spur of the moment, said, why don't we drive Route 66? And to be honest, at the time, neither of us really knew the routing and did not know any of the deep dive history and began right away to say, okay, let's do it. He quickly said, let's find all the old parts. And that became our quest, which meant that often while we were driving from Chicago to L.A., we would spend a lot of time driving down a 10, 20-mile dirt road that perhaps in the 1930s was then a part of Route 66, abandoned since, ghost towns. But we found all of these, including driving down a dead end, knowing it was a dead end, but we wanted to be on the oldest parts, all of them, of Route 66.
Okay, so you have traveled the world, and you've seen a lot of things, so you're a seasoned traveler. In this trip on Route 66, what things surprised even you?
Part of what I think came out about this was that there's a whole America that's not as lost as we often think it is. There are the small towns with the welcoming, you're in my cafe, and you might be the 900th person I've served, but I'm going to treat you like you're the first person ever to have a meal here. And that type of hospitality, welcoming, also the willingness of people to talk about the quirks and the quandaries of their own country, to be forthright about their politics and about the local economy, that was refreshing, and it wasn't filtered through any news media. It wasn't filtered through any way that took out honesty. And so the real America, the authentic America, is there along old Route 66.
When you drove along, did you come across any old-timers who remember the heyday of Route 66? And conversely, were they kind of excited and pleased that, you know, you made the trek as you went along your journey?
One of the things that we found was that everyone was welcoming, and everyone knew that visitors come to drive old Route 66 because they want to see something that is in America as tied to folklore as is the Alamo. And whether they were young or they were old, their pride in Route 66, their commitment to refreshing it and refurbishing some of the old buildings that are about to fall down was really strong. So people would tell us about individual signs that they were working to resurface, or they would tell us about how the diner used to be owned by two other generations of a family, but today they were the owner and they felt tethered to the history of Route 66.
We're living in a time of a tough economy, particularly in the United States. Do you think that a book like yours and the route itself is about to have a renaissance? Because, quite frankly, you can travel along Route 66. It's maybe not as expensive as another trip you might take. And I think people might be discovering that it is not necessarily the destination, but the journey.
You made a really good point, because what we ended up doing was let the journey be the destination, because we've got the 3,900 kilometers, as you mentioned earlier, and what we found along the way was that you would go through major cities. You begin in Chicago, you go through St. Louis, you're through Oklahoma, but it was the sometimes long, lonely stretches, often paved, two-lane, often for an hour you could drive and not see anyone else, and you would feel alone but comfortable, you would feel safe, and you would feel that you were taking a drive through a remarkable history. And hopefully, Route 66 Still Kicks as a book can help rekindle America's love affair with Route 66.
You mentioned it is the most, or probably one of the most famous highways in the world. I'm thinking here in Canada, you know, we have the Trans-Canada Highway, but a lot of people, for instance, like to travel along Old Route 2 that travels through a lot of towns and such, but still doesn't have that same lure as Route 66 does. Is Route 66 more romanticized because of things like the song and the television show?
What's happened with Route 66 over the years is it's slipped from being, you know, America's longest monument, which was coincidentally probably America's longest traffic jam in the late 40s, the 50s, into mythology of being a true statement of the United States, of, in the eyes of many, through the eyes of many, a simpler time of sort of the 50s, where things appeared and in revisionist history are often portrayed as safe and comfortable. It was the best era for Major League Baseball. It was a time of great growth in jazz music. It was the automobiles of the 50s had these amazing tail fin designs. Everything in hindsight seems to have been working at that time, and Route 66 still kicks in part because you get a sense of all of that when you're driving along, so long as you don't rush.
Besides doing a travelogue, you also give a bit of history to Route 66 in your book, and there are stories that deal with personalities, correct?
Well, and part of the strength of any travel book is to have a narrative that's sort of a start to finish, so people are on a journey with the author, and if that's accomplished in Route 66 Still Kicks, it's got to be the anchor of why people would perhaps pick up the book. But you're right, there's a lot of really strong history, interesting vignettes, people like Cyrus Avery, who is known as the father of Route 66, who was an Oklahoman who was very involved in establishing the grid system that we all know today of the north-south routes and the east-west routes that crisscross the United States. And within that is this odd little sweep, a scythe like across the map, that became known as Route 66. So part of what I write about with an individual like that and some of his colleagues is the pavement politics that shaped the United States as we know it today.
Now, you did this trip over 12 days, correct?
Yes.
And no one can really see everything there is to see on Route 66 in 12 days. You've written the book. Would you do it again?
I would absolutely drive Route 66 again, and I would also once more do it going west from Chicago to L.A., following the Nat King Cole song, which was written by Bobby Troup in 1946 after he and his wife Cynthia had taken the trip. And she, in fact, kind of vamped into his ear partway along in the trip and said, as one can imagine, get your kicks on Route 66. And he just about drove in the ditch. He said, what a lovely, lovely title for a song. Bobby Troup wrote it. Within a couple of months, he had arrived in L.A., and Nat King Cole recorded it, became famous, and changed the designation Highway 66 to Route 66 forever, and became a rhythm of the road. It's that rhythm, those place names, that people want to chase.
I can tell in just talking to you that there's a certain fascination and a love for the road. You beam as you talk about it, and I'm sure that's what happens when people travel along the route. I'm kind of jealous. I haven't had the chance to do so myself. Maybe that's something I'll do. But what people can do is pick up your book, which is Route 66 Still Kicks, Driving America's Main Street. I thank you very, very much, Rick, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter. It's just wonderful to hear your enthusiasm for road trips and for Route 66 Still Kicks.
Rick Antonsen, author of Route 66 Still Kicks, Driving America's Main Street. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0152, and you'll find links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Scott Fox, the author of Click Millionaires. Plus, we'll meet Dave Ferguson, who is the host of the radio show Beyond the Cheers. And, of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day coming your way. And lots more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. A program that is heard on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher, the smarter way to listen to radio. Now, this may be more information than you really wanted to know, but the world's largest woman is losing weight like crazy from marathon sex sessions. Pauline Potter became the world's heaviest living woman last year, weighing in at a whopping 643 pounds. Now determined to shed some of those serious poundage, Potter says she's turned to marathon sex sessions to help drop the weight. In an interview with the UK's Closer magazine, Potter described how she reignited sex life with her ex-husband, Alex, and that has helped her to lose 98 pounds. She said, "I can't move much in bed, but I burn 500 calories a session. It's great exercise, just jiggling around." After meeting online in 2002, the couple married in 2005, and when Potter failed to bond with Alex's son, the two split up 3 years later. The breakup triggered Potter's weight gain. She began consuming copious amounts of high-calorie foods and packed on the pounds. She now hopes to get down to 500 pounds or so, just for starters. Well, you know, whatever floats their boat. Ooh, perhaps that was a poor choice of words. Okay, on to the Darwin File, because as you know, the tree of life is often self-pruning. At the Copenhagen Zoo in Denmark, a 21-year-old man entered the Siberian tiger enclosure to possibly feed the animals. He was successful. They mauled him to death. Investigators could not exclude suicide as a motive, as the guy sustained multiple bite wounds to the throat, face, chest, and a thigh. The man was granted Danish citizenship just a month ago. His body was found surrounded by the zoo's three Siberian tigers early Wednesday morning. Copenhagen Zoo manager Stefan Strada said it was the first time in the zoo's 152-year history that such an incident has occurred, and there are no plans to reassess its security or to put the tigers down. I love this quote. He said, "If a person really wants to get in there, we cannot prevent it from happening." Can't really fight that logic, can you? Yeah. Anyway, talk about being blindsided. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, police said 38-year-old would-be burglar Thomas Molina was blindsided by an unlikely obstacle, a set of window blinds. Police found Molina hopelessly tangled in some window blinds at Central New Mexico Community College after they received a call about a break-in. He was arrested and charged with burglary and breaking and entering. You know, this guy came dangerously close to being the idiot of the day, but he did not, because that comes later. Patricia A. Mayoni, age 46, stated that her GPS had told her to turn left. That's according to a Northbridge, Massachusetts police officer who wrote this in his report. She stated that this left brought her into a cornfield, and once she was in the cornfield, she kept driving, trying to get out of her cornfield. It wasn't the cornfield. It was a golf course. The officer found her car stuck in the sand trap, and witnesses say she took the left turn onto the course at about 45 miles per hour. It wasn't so much of a failure of the GPS navigation unit as it was, the officer found, that Patricia allegedly admitted that she had drunk half a bottle of vodka. She was charged with driving on a suspended license. You know, they always seem to have, in these stories, a suspended license. That should be a hint right there. When they take your license away, it's usually for a reason. Anyway, she was driving with a suspended license. It's a fourth offense, drunk driving. And she was also charged with driving with an open container of alcohol in her car. You know, she was on a golf course. She could have yelled four, but it sounds like she had a fifth. Moving right along, Kalpesh Kumar Patel, age 40, pulled into a gas station in High Springs, Florida, which is the gas station, by the way, he used to work at. The station's owner was expecting him. He said Patel had called several times and left messages saying he was going to set fire to his car to burn the station down. Sure enough, Patel pulled up to the pump, witnesses say, and spewed gasoline on his car and on himself. But he couldn't complete his threat. He asked several people if he could borrow a lighter, and either they didn't have one or wouldn't loan it to him. Patel was arrested and charged with aggravated assault and attempted arson. You know, I'm guessing the reason for his dismissal? Probably reports to work unprepared. Just a guess on my part. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our next guest, a battle between neighbors in western New York intensified when one woman put a pair of fake testicles in her backyard. Shirley Draper of Tonawanda put the fake testicles in her yard in June. Her neighbor, Peter DiLiberto, called the Tonawanda Police Department June 27th to complain about the lawn ornament, but was told the police could not handle the issue as displaying fake testicles is not considered illegal. In response, Peter and his wife took a picture of Draper's false testicles and made a laminated yard sign that points to Draper's yard. Draper tried to rip the picture out of Peter's yard July the 4th, according to Police Lieutenant Nick Bado. She wasn't arrested at that time, but will be served criminal summons for fourth-degree criminal mischief and trespassing. You know, the neighbors have allegedly been feuding for years, so my personal theory is, this is a thought, that Draper decided to use the lawn ornament to send a message. After all, it's rude to call your neighbor a part of the male anatomy to his face, but to do it with a statue? Now that's just plain funny. Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Scott Fox is the number one e-business advisor. He has written several books on the growing business plan. His latest one is hot off the press. It's called Click Millionaires, Work Less, Live More with an Internet Lifestyle Business You Love. And Scott joins us on the line via Skype to Skype communications from California. Hi, Scott.
Hi there, Peter. Great to be back.
Nice to have you back on the program with us. So you spent more than a year, if I'm correct, in putting this book together, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
And as I said in the introduction, you're the go-to guy when it comes to e-business. So you spent a year on this book, and this thing is changing very rapidly. On this trip you took to write this book, did the landscape change faster than you anticipated it would?
Yeah, I guess in some ways it did. I mean, you know, my books are about sort of a big picture of strategy. It's dangerous to get caught up too much in the specific tactics. A lot of consultants and people and gurus online want to wed you to some specific trick, like with a YouTube videos or search engine optimization or something like that. But I tried to go a little more strategic. But even then, there were a couple things that popped out of nowhere, like Pinterest. Pinterest kind of came out of nowhere in the last 6 months, and that's not in the book. But there are the other principles I think are pretty timeless about how anybody can find their own way to making some money online.
Now, one of the things about making money online, it kind of harkens back to the days of the gold rush. You have everybody rushing to California, or in some cases here in Canada, the Klondike, or Alaska, looking for gold, looking to strike it rich. But the people who really struck it rich during the gold rush, are the people who sell pickaxes and pans.
Yes, that's a great point. The gold rush has been on now for, gosh, I guess a good 15 years on the internet. And that's what I'm really writing about, I think, is that a lot of people still don't think it applies to them. And your point about the pickaxes and shovels and the Levi Strauss, right? He sold blue jeans to the miners, and he's still around. The company's still around anyway. The way to make money doing that is to go and find your own thing online. The book isn't about, and I wouldn't recommend, for example, trying to set up a bookstore to compete with Amazon.com right now, right? I mean, they pretty much nailed that. But the average person actually can start a business online based on their own hobbies and interests and build what I call a lifestyle business, which means a business that helps support your life and maybe gets you out of that job you hate. Not overnight. I'm not a get-rich-quick guy, but build something reasonable over time, your own version of those picks and shovels and pans you mentioned, and improve your life by becoming an entrepreneur on the internet.
However, one of the things the internet does is it allows you an easier access to becoming an entrepreneur, but don't you still have to have the basics? In other words, if you're not necessarily that good of an entrepreneur in your daily life, in the real brick and mortar world, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a good one in this e-version of entrepreneurship.
Well, I don't know. I might take exception to that. I mean, I guess that's not untrue, but it's only half of the equation. The thing that really changes with the internet that I think is so exciting is that you can try, and even if you're bad at it, you don't risk that much. The costs are so low. It doesn't take any capital, really, to start a small business. I'm not talking about starting the next Facebook, right, where you need $100 million of venture capital. I'm talking about a niche blog or a small e-commerce store or something like that. And you can set up a blog literally for free these days. You can start an e-commerce store for maybe $20 a month. I mean, the risks are so low here that I think you wouldn't have to be a genius, and you don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be Mark Zuckerberg or Steve Jobs or Richard Branson and come up with some game-changing, world-changing entrepreneurial vision. But you can get online for maybe the price of a dinner out and spend some time after work, you know, on your laptop, on the kitchen table, weekends, here and there, and get your feet wet and learn how to do this. And that really is the approach that Click Millionaires advocates, and that's what we talk about in the Click Millionaires Forum. Is to coach people step by step. You know, we're not trying to set the world on fire here. We're trying to improve your life day by day with the small steps. And even if you're not an experienced entrepreneur, I think you've got a shot online because the risks are a lot lower than they used to be.
Well, speaking of online, your book, Click Millionaires, is not just a book, correct?
That's right. That's right. Actually, the one of the breakthrough ideas with this book, I'm not sure it's the first book that ever has done this, but it might be, is we're actually offering anybody that reads the book, or buys the book, they get access to a free forum on the internet where I'm actually there and I have a team and we're coaching people for free to help them learn how to do this and how to build their own businesses. And this isn't some like bait and switch thing where we're trying to talk you into, you know, some big, you know, $5,000 nonsense. I actually give the profits from my books to charity. I do this because I get excited about it, and I think more people deserve the opportunity to explore this stuff. And I've been running a private version of this forum for 3 years already, very successfully, and now we're opening it up for free to help other people. And you can meet friendly people for free from all over the world if you buy Click Millionaires, and then come over to clickmillionaires.com, and we'll help you too.
Well, you just brought up a very interesting point. You're saying, you know, this is not a bait and switch type of situation, because a lot of people out there certainly have fears of scams and predators out there on the internet, which stops people in some cases from venturing out into doing things on the internet because they're afraid of that vast frontier. What do you tell them?
Yeah, that's a great point. A lot of people that's why I write. And you can see I've written 3 books. My publisher is the American Management Association, you know, real reputable folks. I'm a reputable guy. Well, you and I have known each other for years now just through the radio, right? We've done publicity for all my books together, and I'm still here. I'm a real guy, and I'm honestly trying to help people. Both my parents were teachers. I guess it's in my blood, and I made plenty good money on the internet myself, and I think that folks are right to be a little bit afraid and a bit skeptical, but at the same time, if you're too skeptical, you don't get the opportunities, and you got to at least come out. You know, you got to, you know, baseball metaphor that we Americans love, you got to get up to bat before you can hit a home run, and I think you're right to be skeptical, as you said, but if you don't try, you're not going to score. In fact, I thought of a better Canadian one, right? Wayne Gretzky said, Wayne Gretzky said, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So you got to get out there and take a shot.
Well, you just mentioned, we discussed the fact that this is a fast-changing situation with the internet. And you just mentioned that you have made a fair amount of money as an internet entrepreneur. So having said that, since it's changing so quickly, in what ways did you make money on the internet that you couldn't do now, and vice versa?
Well, that's interesting. I might have to give that some thought. Well, you know, the old days, it was easy to put up a website on some niche topic and people would show up because it was the first one. Or you didn't have to worry about whether the search engines were noticing your website or not. And these days, you do have to spend a little more time thinking about writing content or creating products that will be attractive to both search engines and people. Those things have changed a bit, and it is a little more competitive. And probably the biggest one's what I mentioned already, that the game has changed for the big niches. Like, you don't open a bookstore to compete with Amazon.com. And then the other big opportunity, I'd say, that's new is mobile. Right? Everything is going to be redone. If you think you missed the whole internet, which I did, I don't think you did, but even if you had, it's all going to be recreated on mobile and then in all kinds of foreign languages around the world, too. So there's still lots and lots of opportunity, lots of green fields for anybody listening to learn to plow.
And what are some of the biggest pitfalls? And the reason why I asked that question is we can all remember a few years ago the dot-com crash, where mm-hmm. everyone rushed to the dot-coms and you had people spending literally millions of dollars to advertise in the Super Bowl ad, and 6 months later that company's gone.
Yes, exactly. That was a scary time. But those were mostly the public markets and people putting money into companies that they didn't understand. And actually, that was a very high-risk approach. People got out of their, you know, out of their depth. And the Click Millionaires approach is actually very measured. It's very much about what I said earlier, taking time after work, part-time, get rich slowly, or build a business that you really like, even if you're not getting rich, but you do work that you care about, that you feel is helping you and maybe helping others too. That kind of lifestyle balance is really missing from our society these days, and that's what Click Millionaires is about, and the coaching that we give in the Click Millionaires Forum is really about trying to balance lifestyle and business so that you're not spending all your time making your boss rich when you could be doing things that allow you to have a more flexible, creative, and independent lifestyle and career.
And the idea, too, I would assume, is to do something like this when it's not a push-comes-to-shove situation. You could do this, as you say, at the kitchen table while you still have a full-time job, for instance.
Yes, exactly. Most of our Click Millionaires members are just getting started. You know, a lot of them are successful online already, but a lot of folks, like I said, are like you said, they have jobs and they're transitioning. Especially, we've got like a lot of baby boomers that are looking at retirement and thinking, "Boy, you know, this corporate thing didn't help me put away as much money as I expected. I better get on, you know, start something on the side here." Or we have people who tried multi-level marketing, and that's just a kind of a tough road to hoe. And that, you know, they're coming over to us. Or people just out of college saying, you know, I don't want to work for a big company. There's no job security there anyway. Maybe I can start something of my own here. And we serve all those markets because, frankly, there's opportunity for all of them.
Where and how can people find the book?
The book is worldwide in the bookstore, so support your favorite independent bookseller or drop by Borders, or Borders is gone now, Barnes & Noble or Chapters or airport bookstores. And, of course, online is the easiest probably at barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com.
And your website again is?
Clickmillionaires.com. Come and see us. We'd love to meet you.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Scott. It's great to have you on the program with us once again.
Thanks, Peter. Always happy to be here.
Scott Fox, author of Click Millionaires, Work Less, Live More with an Internet Lifestyle Business You Love. You can visit Scott's website at clickmillionaires.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0152, and you'll find links to Scott's site, plus links to Amazon.com, where you can order his book directly for the Kindle. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Here's an interesting question. If you send a text message to someone while they're driving, and they cause a crash and hurt someone while reading it, should the injured person be able to sue you? A lawyer for two people injured by a man who was reading a text message from his girlfriend while driving asked a judge to answer that question. Other personal injury lawyers have been closely watching this lawsuit, and a ruling was recently made. Judge David Rand dismissed the lawsuit against the girlfriend, saying it's the driver's responsibility to ignore such distractions. Let's be fair, it makes sense to hold drivers responsible for accidents they cause, but it's another thing to sue someone who wasn't even in the car. As the judge said, if he allowed a lawsuit against the person who sent the text message, lawsuits could then be filed against anyone who creates a distraction for drivers, like putting a sign by a road. Kudos to Judge Rand. I hope other judges were watching this. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Dave Ferguson, host of the radio show Beyond the Cheers. And, of course, there's an idiot of the day. But right now, more Stuff File news for your listening pleasure. When 21-year-old Benjamin Sickles allegedly broke into a Subway sandwich shop and stole several bags of potato chips, he just couldn't wait to dig in. That proved to be his undoing as police in Washington, D.C. followed a trail of potato chips until they caught Sickles red-handed. And we mean that literally. Investigators say Sickles broke a glass door trying to get into the cash register, which he was unsuccessful in doing. They say he made off with 9 bags of chips after he couldn't get the cash. When police found him, Sickles had a bloody hand and foot. Now, do they have quality brand name chips in prison, or is he going to have to eat that cardboard no-name stuff while he's incarcerated? Just asking. Police in Westlake, Ohio are investigating the case of a real-life cleaning fairy after someone broke into a residence and did some light cleaning, then left a bill for $75. A little scary given that although the home's owner was out, their teenage daughter was asleep upstairs. The cleaning fairy took out the trash, vacuumed the carpet, and cleaned up the living room. Boy, that daughter is a sound sleeper, huh? Homeowner Sherry Bush said, "I think our jaws just dropped to the ground. There was some coffee mugs that my husband had out. She had washed them all. We know the culprit is a woman because she left a note on a napkin reading, $75, I was here to clean, and left her name and number." Assuming she had got the right house, Mrs. Bush gave the woman a call. The woman said she indeed had the right house, explaining, "No, I do this all the time. That's how I make my living." Wow. So I can assume that some people have been paying her after she broke into their houses. Yeesh. And Joshua Garlathy of Pennsylvania wins our Moron of the Day award after he was arrested and ordered to pay more than $32,000 in back child support. Yes, that's bad, but that's not why he is a moron. What makes him a moron is how he was tricked into returning to Philadelphia. A bounty hunter promised him a bogus role in an upcoming Jennifer Aniston movie. Joshua bought it and was arrested right after his flight from Hawaii landed in Philadelphia. His arrest came courtesy of a new law making it a crime to move out of state to avoid paying child support. He was also sentenced to 90 days of probation and says he hopes he can rebuild his relationship with his daughter. Well, you know, he was almost the idiot of the day, but that story is just too plain sad for him to be that. The idiot comes later. Let's get to our next guest, idiot coming up in a few moments. Don't go away. Dave Ferguson is a sports fundamentalist and the host of the popular radio show Beyond the Cheers, which is heard Wednesdays from 7 to 8 Eastern. He's on the show to talk about something that we seem to be seeing more often, that is cheating in sports. And Dave joins us on the line from London, Ontario. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. The situation or the problem with cheating in sports, is it something that there seems to be more cheating in sports, or are we more vigilant in catching it and with the media, the 24-hour media cycle, more vigilant in talking about it?
Good question, and I think the answer to all of that is yes, in short, but it's becoming, you know, front and foremost. Media is drawing more attention to it because of a lot of the other things that have gone on, such as baseball and the bounty program, Spygate, and all the other things. You know, all rolled into one. We're a little more, maybe less tolerant of it, or maybe we're more. Well, we're not more tolerant, but less tolerant of it, and it's just getting a lot of grabbing a lot of hype and a lot of media attention. And but I do think. I think it's more prevalent today than perhaps it may have been years ago. Specifically, do you get into you know, the topics of metabolic steroids and HGH and all the other things that go along with under the big umbrella of cheating?
Okay, well, is the problem of cheating becoming a greater situation because of technology? Either when you talk about metabolic steroids and the fact that it's medical advancements, or in the case of Spygate, where you have technology that allows you to do the types of things that makes cheating easier.
Well, I agree. I think technology does play a real role in that. With the Spygate and trying to get one leg up or one hand up on the opposing team by doing things of that nature. But I think the rudimentary thing, getting right back down to the crux of it, is I think with all the dollars that are involved in sports today, especially at the pro level, I think we're getting more conscious and more, at least from the sporting teams and the organizations themselves, is the win mentality and whatever it costs to do to get there, and if they get caught, then it's a hand slap or, in the past, in days gone by, they typically haven't been penalized an awful lot for things of that nature. Now they're getting more, the fines and the indefinite suspensions, specifically in football, for doing things that you shouldn't be doing in the first place.
What about that old adage? Let me play devil's advocate for a minute here, that old adage, if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, I think cheating has always been in sports to some degree, but as you mentioned, with technology and the medical advancements and the chemicals and things out there that we're able to do today, where we weren't able to do 50 years ago. I mean, 50 years ago in baseball, or 40 years ago even, I mean, you'd sit there and you'd try to watch the signals and figure them all out. Now you're getting to the point where you're getting all the long telephoto lenses and things like that to catch the signals. Technology certainly has played a role in that today.
I watch, for instance, the NFL Network, and you see a lot of their great films. And one film that caught my eye was one which talked about how, with all the media getting out there to show what's going on and how teams are practicing, sometimes we in the media do the cheating for the teams because we do B-roll on television packages that actually show what teams are planning to do when they're practicing.
Exactly. We're playing a part of that. Media does have some role into it. I don't think we necessarily put all the cards on the table when we're divulging information and things of that nature, but we're certainly turning over a card or two, so the opposing team. But I think in a lot of cases, when you get down to the Super Bowl and you get down to the World Series, you get to the Stanley Cup, I think the cards are still relatively closed, put closely to the team's chest, and they may let you see what they think you want to see in order to, and it can be used as a ploy, if you will, for the media is watching something or capturing something, but that they may want the opposing team to see that in order to throw them off the track, basically.
I was reading the mail section in a recent Sports Illustrated issue that was responding to a previous story about cheating, and there were male responses, both pro and con, to the story that was written. I just want to get your thought on this particular one. Somebody actually wrote in saying that as far as they were concerned, they were watching entertainment when it came to professional sports, and if the people who were involved in entertaining them were doing things that were illegal, and this was a metabolic steroid situation, that he really didn't care, that he was all about the entertainment that he was getting, and if metabolic steroids were making these people bigger and faster and stronger, he didn't have a problem with that. I'd like to get your response on something like that.
Well, that poses an interesting question. I was talking about this not too long ago on one of my programs. You take the Olympics, for example. It's an $800 billion-plus event that goes on. And you kind of wonder if some things are turning the blind eye a little bit sometimes, because, quite honestly, are people going to sit and watch the Olympic Games or any other sporting event where there's records on the line? Are they going to watch them intently? Are they going to pay dollars to go see them if there's not an opportunity for a world record to be broken? So you take that into consideration. So the audience, the media, everybody's kind of feeding or fueling this frenzy that they want a world record broken, and they're in something. They don't really care what it is. but they want a world record broken. Now, I know there's been athletes caught over the years, Ben Johnson and a number of others come to mind where they've been caught, they broke a record, they've been caught using, you know, performance-enhancing substances. But from what I'm hearing from doping control officers and things of that nature, they are not. There are still a lot that do slip through the cracks. There are a lot of athletes that are using steroids today that or performance-enhancing drugs, I'd rather call them, because steroids are almost passe at this particular point in time, because now you're getting into things like DNA. So I think the athletes in the medical community, especially the medical community or the chemists that are producing this stuff, are always one step ahead of the testing. The IOC has come out this year and said, no DNA whatsoever for in order to manipulative of that nature, and it's banned. But on one hand, they say that. On the other hand, they don't have a test ready for it. So they're telling you it's a banned, you know, substance or a banned way to get your performance enhanced, but they have no way of testing it at this particular point in time. So it's kind of an oxymoron, if you will, with things like that. But I think we're fueling that, because we won't sit and watch sports if there aren't records being broken.
On another so-called cheating scandal that was in professional sports, the bounty program that the New Orleans Saints and the NFL was hit with, were you surprised by the outroar that or the uproar, rather, that came out over this particular situation? And the reason why I asked that question is, while I think it's wrong that the New Orleans Saints was doing it, I was surprised at how people seemed to be surprised that this was in the game.
I was too. You know, I was kind of taken aback because, it's, we can probably go back a number of years as to a lot of the stuff going on. And I know it's prevalent in a number of other sports, hockey and things of that nature, where there's... the prizes on the line and things of that nature. So I actually was taken aback when people were dismayed and surprised and, crying foul and, this has never happened before. Well, that's the first time somebody got caught is the thing of it, because it's been going on for a number of years, and I think it will continue to go on unless, unfortunately they're being made of a bit of a scapegoat of the whole thing, just to try and send a message back out to the other teams. Not necessarily in football, but the sports in general. But we've caught these folks. Here's what we're going to start penalizing you with.
I think the biggest problem we have here when we talk about cheating in sports across the board, be it from performance-enhancing drugs to things like Spygate to things like the bounty program, is not what it does in professional sports, but how do we stop it from trickling down to kids who are playing sports?
That's my biggest fear, it's it trickles down to the kids. I mean, even looking at doping scandals and, people with records, should they be in the record books with an asterisk and some sort of notation next to them that, yeah, they did get to the Hall of Fame, or they did get to the specific level in sport, but there's a little notation there saying that they used performance-enhancing drugs. And unfortunately, that sends the wrong message back to the kids, and that's actually where we need to get back to that level of kids, whether it's athletes going out to that have gone through some of the, whether it's the bounty scandal, whether it's doping scandals, things of that nature that have gone through that, come out on the other side of it, and they go back and share that information with kids that they did wrong and they shouldn't have done that. And that is not the right way to get yourself into sports and carry all the way through. Because you're right, it sends the wrong message to the kids. And this, which is where it needs to get cleaned up, is at the kids' level. And I know at the Olympic level, we've got pockets of athletes out there now that have the Test Me, I'm Clean program. And that's growing. I'm not sure if it's growing in leaps and bounds, but it's certainly growing. And there's a dissension among the ranks for the ones that are clean against the ones that are not at the Olympic level as well. But we do have to clean it up specifically for the kids, because they do emulate and copy what they see, and we need some positive role models for them.
On that note, I thank you very much, Dave, for taking the time to be on the program with us, and continued success with your show, Beyond the Cheers.
Thank you very much. Pleasure being on the show.
Dave Ferguson, host of Beyond the Cheers. You can visit Dave's website at beyondthecheers.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0152, and you'll find links to Dave's website. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
In Kearney, Nebraska, police arrested Jason Dornhoff after allegedly writing a bomb threat on the back of a restaurant job application. He was arrested at gunpoint and police searched his truck but didn't find any bomb. Dornhoff's own explanation doesn't exactly help his case. He told officers he uses methamphetamines and went to the restaurant hoping to find a way to fulfill his sexual fantasies. He did manage to post a $10,000 bond and is due back in court on August 13th. Now, what I want to know is, why would someone write a bomb threat on the back of a job application when they're looking for work and then tell the cops that they use meth and were looking for sex? One reason, and one reason only: he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0152. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0152. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Stitcher and iTunes, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.